support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
I'm Chris West, West Winery. I'm the owner of West Winery, along with my wife, Jen West.
Kayla Harta, and I manage the Macon location of West Winery and then assistant winemaking.
The reason I'm here is to explore and discover wines and winemaking in Missouri, and that's what you do. Tell us about how it started for you and why you got interested.
Well, I first just started making it in my house, and then I moved to the basement from the kitchen, but after that we outgrew that and we wound up deciding we were going to start a winery, and this was our first location that we had started. Basically, the whole reason I started making wine is because I get really bored, and like I can master things pretty quickly, and I don't know that I'll ever be able to master winemaking. And there's just too many variables happen within a season, and the fruit, you know, your processes and stuff. We can try to limit those, but we really are in an industry that will keep me interested for years. Mm-hmm. So,
personally, what do you think the premier grape is to utilize?
Here in Missouri, in our place, I would say Chamberson for red grapes. Chardonnay is pretty good. It's a Chardonnay hybrid. Or Vidal Blanc is another good one. You can blend it, or you can do straight varietals with them if you got good years with grapes. And so the Chamberson, though, we've won the most awards off of Chamberson. We're kind of a Chamberson house, I guess, is what we would say. So
would you say that Chamberson does best in Missouri? Is it ideally suited for the soil and weather and temperature?
It is. Up this far north, though, in northern Missouri, they tend to start straggling off. And there's not a lot of old vines here, so most of our grapes come from like the middle of Missouri where there's at least 12-year-old. I try to use 12-year-old vines at the very youngest. You get any younger vines, they get real acidic. And they make great sweet wines. Mm-hmm. We make a sweet Chamberson, but
have you ever encountered any ancient vines?
Ancient vines.
100-year-old, 80-year-old?
During Prohibition, a lot of our stuff got trashed out, and you know, people started doing other things. Any of the old good grapes like Chamberson or Norton or these other ones, they're just not old enough. Our industry here took a big hit, and I think it started coming back in about the 70s, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. So we're all kind of like winging it. We're the farthest, one of the farthest northern wineries. And so we are in actually a different growing area too. And so I've tried to, you know, create relationships with growers down in the middle of the state, the Herman, and pretty much along the river.
Is there a temperate benefit of being riverfront?
A little bit. It's more about the soil down there. The limestone cliffs are great for growing, but maybe a little bit of a temperate, but Herman's in a valley, and they grow some pretty good grapes. If you go too far south in the state, you start getting into the southern, and the grapes get too hot in the summer. So we're kind of right there in the middle of a good little growing area.
As objective as you can be, what's your feeling about Missouri wines and the wine industry and what's happening? I know it's a tough one.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Well, you're close to the grindstone.
Missouri is probably one of the toughest places to make wine because of the variance in weather. It's too hot, it's too cold, your vines freeze in the winter, and then in the summer you can get your grapes cooked. If you can make wine in Missouri, you can make wine anywhere. I originally started out making fruit wine because I had grown up on an orchard and we had extra fruit and stuff. Mm-hmm. And fruit wines are even harder to make than grape wines.
Oh, interesting.
They don't have all of the ingredients that are needed. You're either short on sugar, you're short on acid, or over acid. And so I was able to like start manipulating with those, and then we moved to grapes because it's so easy compared to what I'm used to doing or was used to doing. And that's what people wanted, so we went that way. But Missouri is a great, great place. I wish it wasn't known for being a sweet wine state, though.
But part of that is just the people in the Midwest. I know Wisconsin is legendary for sweet everything.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, if I may say so, I do think that's changing. I don't think that, I mean, if we just talk about my sales here in this one location, I'm not seeing only sweet wine drinkers. Honestly, I'll take any kind of wine drinker.
It's the older generation that's into sweet wines more so. Isn't that right?
Not from what I see on a day-to-day. So, really, it's an...
So college kids are just as likely to go sweet as...
Interesting. Yeah, and then, you know, I think a lot of it, first, you should drink what you like.
Yep.
What makes you happy is the absolute goal. But I would say it's pretty average as far as...
Across the board.
Yeah, I've seen plenty of 25-year-olds that enjoy a dry white wine or a big dry red or somewhere in between or a sweet. And so a lot of it, you know, is dependent on what season is it and what food do I have. And that's really kind of how I approach it personally as well as professionally. I see a lot of people that enjoy dry wine and a lot of people that enjoy sweet. But I think as long as you're enjoying what you're drinking.
But we don't make fun of anybody for drinking sweet wine. And that happens quite regularly.
It does.
But a lot of those people, too, is... With the sweet wine, it's an introduction to the wine industry as a whole, and we should embrace those people, yes, but what we've been doing it, 13 years now here, and we've seen people graduate from the sweet wines up to the dry wines because they just don't want all the sugar, and, and that's great.
As a winemaker, beyond satisfying your own passions and what you love, you almost have to make a broad swath lexicon of wines for the people that come to your retail establishments.
We want to find something that everyone that comes in can enjoy and appreciate. So whether it's dry or sweet or somewhere in between, and our list is fairly well spread as far as dry to sweet. You know, we have run about 10 in each category, if you will, dry in the middle and sweet on average. I mean, give or take 8 to 10.
And now we're getting to the point where we're actually kind of whittling down. We just would make stuff and try it out, and if people responded to it, we would be like, okay, we'll make it again and try to make it better the next year. And every year we need to make it a little bit better. Just make a tweak or maybe use a different yeast or do something different. And like at our Hannibal location, they have completely different wines. They have some of our wines that we make here, but they actually have a different palate. The people that are coming in to visit the cave there, they have a different palate.
Interesting.
And even from, you know, Macon. Macon's got old Italians, and we have a huge Catholic population, and we have some Germans and Irish too. A bunch of drinkers. So we've been fairly well received here in the town with that. But if you talk to the old Italians here in town, they're like, where's that dry red, you know? And they remember times of making it in their house, too. So,
in the basement.
Yeah. And I can totally relate to that because that's where I started.
So again, here, what's your number one most popular wine?
When we have it, the signature red after that, which is a dry red.
But the signature red is kind of a classic table red?
It's a red blend.
And so, and a blend of what?
Chambersin and Syrah, which is the only grape that we get from outside the state is that Syrah. And then after that, when we have it, the blackberry is a huge selling wine. Yeah, for sure. So Duck Creek Red is always a good selling wine as well, and that's a Concord based and is easily found for our customers that are local in the grocery stores and stuff like that, which is nice.
It's more of the retail, throw it out to wholesale, and then, you know. And it's great, but our blackberry is probably the most awarded. We do a different blackberry process. We treat them like grapes, and a lot of places don't do that. And for a while now, we've had a grower here in Missouri that grows our blackberries. We try to use everything local, hyper-local when it comes to
when you
making stuff. So pretty much all the time.
So right now, we're in the heart of downtown, and this is a retail spot with some production in the back. Who comes here typically?
We have a really great local base of customers, mm-hmm. That those repeat customers that come in 1 to 4 times a month. And then we also see a lot of travelers being on the crossroads of 36 and 63, people on their way from point A to point B, but that love wine and find stops along the way.
So they seek you out mm-hmm. when they're on the road, yeah.
Yeah, yep. We're a pretty good split with, I'd say, about 40, 60 local to travelers, mm-hmm. Travelers or visitors to Macon or Missouri wine enthusiasts, I guess, if you
yeah.
will. So.
Yeah.
And before, like, the pandemic, we were all about music, too. Like, mm-hmm. we try to find singer-songwriters. We don't allow cover bands to come in and play, but we'll bring them in from out of place so mm-hmm. people here can, you know, get the feel for something that's in Columbia, Missouri, or Chicago or St. Louis, and they can see them right up close.
That's really cool. Yeah.
But that's kind of, you know, we're trying to be safe.
And, is it more pop-up, or you're able to plan ahead and advertise?
We'll have some open mics to introduce the, mm-hmm. some of the locals to come in and play, and mm-hmm. that's been pretty good. We have a couple of festivals. And
yeah, pre-2020, I mean, we very regularly had music scheduled, trivia, mm-hmm. brunches, winemakers' dinners. Yeah, quite a lot of events.
I bet
we'll
you're,
get back there.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're yeah. probably biting at the bit. To,
yes, yeah, in time. We'll get back there in time. And then we do pop-up shops with local artisans that handmake mm-hmm. all of their goods that they sell. And then we always have those in-house, too, for people, you know, to purchase if they want. And so we're anxious to get back to the...
Okay. We're downtown. What are your neighbors? What's the downtown like? You know, we just rolled in here.
Yeah. Well, and on a Wednesday at 5:15, everything's kind of quiet mm-hmm. for the moment. So we have some really great locally owned stores around us. Do you want names and stuff?
What
kind of stuff?
Yeah, sure.
So there are a couple that have apparel, men's, women's, sports apparel, shoes, home goods.
Ben Franklin.
What was he going to say?
Ben Franklin's like a craft mm-hmm. store. We get a lot of people from places that like to craft mm-hmm. and do mm-hmm. crafts and mm-hmm. stuff. We've got a great theater down the street that brings in a lot of people that from other places for the good theater.
There's a few festivals spread throughout the year, a couple. The Fork and Quirk is an artisan festival, and then there is the Downtown Association sponsors live music through the summer once a month on average, and then their benefit for the food pantry every year, a bicycling event, Boots and Black Ties, the fundraiser for the theater.
Somebody wants to learn more about your world, where would they go to find out?
Well, you can either go to westwiner.com, or you can find us on Facebook. We've got 3 different pages for the 3 different locations we have. It's all something with West Winery in it. Instagram, and I don't know if we still do Twitter or not.
And your location?
We are in Macon, Missouri.
And there's another one, too, another retail?
Yeah, we have... we have 2 other ones. One's in Kirksville at Jackson Stables, which tends to be more of our places where you can go and have an event, weddings and stuff like that. We kind of push that. And then the Mark Twain Cave in Hannibal. We are located right in the Mark Twain Cave complex.
Did Mark Twain hang out in there?
I would.
Or Becky? Or...
That'd be real cool. We do have a Mark Twain guy that is an impersonator. Uh-huh. He's pretty good.
That's cool.
But... the whole thing in Hannibal and Mark Twain Cave is all about the Mark Twain series. We mm-hmm. have Mark Twain labels and everything for that. So that's what it's all about.
That's really cool.
And my name is Chris West.
My name is Kayla Hartung.
Hi, my name is Bridget Grace Sheaf. We're here in Macon, Missouri at the Royal Theater, home of Maples Repertory Theater.
And the theater blows my mind. It was like 1889?
1889 is when it was originally built.
And it's so vintage and so original in so many ways.
It is. It's been taken care of really well.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of original pieces.
Yeah, it's a miracle that it made it.
I know. Yeah. And you just don't expect it in a town of this size to have something like this. It really is a hidden gem here in Macon. But we see 10,000 patrons a year, so we know people like it.
Like I was telling your friend, it's like a little Ryman Auditorium. Uh-huh. It just has that class and elegance, you know.
Yeah, it does. It really, you get the historic sense of the theater when you walk in.
Was there a period of time when it did big silver screen, you know, Hollywood productions, movies?
You know, when Todd first bought the theater in the 90s, he did show movies here for a while.
But predating that, like in the 50s or was
no, not that I know of.
Pretty much was always a live theater venue.
It served as the municipal auditorium. So the high school, just on the other side of town in Macon, is not that far. But they didn't have an auditorium in the school.
So this was their auditorium.
It was for meetings for the military academy, for their concerts and plays and things like that as well.
But so also, maybe high school graduations?
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
Probably. We still see events kind of like that here sometimes. We, in addition to our six-show season at Maples Rep, we host the community theater. We host concerts and other events and dance recitals and and things like that. So we're really open to the whole community.
So over the past 120 years, did you have a lot of traveling theater troupes that would perform here?
Some, not as much as some of the bigger cities. You're not going to see the same sort of legwork that you would see in something like Kansas City or St. Louis, but we are right along the railroad tracks here in Macon, so it was pretty easy to pull up a freight train with a show and come in and do some vaudeville here, so there's some history of that.
That's cool.
Definitely.
And then somebody was talking earlier about the orphan trains that would come through town.
Yeah, so in the 30s, during the Depression, we have some pretty extensive records of the orphan trains.
And explain what that was. And
so the orphan trains are just these trains full of children who need homes, and they come out to the rural area of Missouri, and they get brought up on stage, and families take them in. They say, oh, I want this one and this one, and or I've got room for these ones. And so that would also have happened here in town, you know, just with the time period and the kind of meeting place that the theater can be. I love the connection to the community and the fact that it was used for the city and for the county and for the military academy and for the schools, and that we still have that connection here.
And today,
in this building,
you have a professional equity
theater
group here.
Yeah. Yeah, so Maples Repertory Theater is a professional equity theater.
So they get paid.
They get paid. Everybody gets paid who works here, even me. And we do six shows a year. We run June through December. We do a lot of musicals, but we have some straight plays as well. We see about 10,000 people come through to see performances here. And our actors come from all over the country, and we have a lot of people who come back year after year. They're local favorites, fan favorites, but also they just love working here. There's such a great community here in Macon. And to have a community like Macon that is so ready to support the arts like this is really remarkable. And I think a lot of our actors coming from wherever they're coming from really resonate with that as well.
And some of the shows they have done and are and you're planning to do?
Yeah, so we did production of Annie this last summer. That was like our fourth highest selling show.
Wow.
We're coming up on our Christmas show, which is Tis the Season, which is an original piece created for Maples Rep that I actually wrote. So we're doing that, which is pretty exciting. But next season, we have four musicals that we're doing, including Hank Williams' Lost Highway, which will be really cool. It's like a Hank Williams biography musical. And Something's Afoot, which is like three Agatha Christie murder mysteries sort of in one play. It's also a musical. Mm-hmm. And that'll be really fun. Some of our more popular shows were Mamma Mia or the Buddy Holly story. People talk about our production of Drowsy Chaperone quite a lot. So you get sort of the whole gambit here. We've done quite a bit, and we're coming up on our 20th season in 2023. So you look around and you really just see the like breadth of work and types of work that gets done here by just hundreds of artists over the years. Mm-hmm. So,
and right now we're outside kind of a foyer.
Yeah,
area.
We're in the lobby.
Yeah, and this is where people congregate and chat, and you have cocktails or things available.
Our signature here is that we serve a dessert during intermission that you can buy, and we have it prepped and ready for you. Todd makes it in-house, or it's all made by staff. Cobbler is our most popular, and he has a couple kinds. Peach cobbler is very popular here. So that's always exciting, and that's sort of a unique thing about Maples Rep. We also serve a dinner before our Sunday performance, so that also happens out here. We think that food is a really good way to engage with the community. especially in Macon. You know, you get close enough, you're in the South, basically, at this point, and people like to come to eat. So
that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting hungry.
I'm always. So.
If somebody wanted to learn more about your world,
they can visit our Facebook, Maples Repertory Theater, also our website, maplesrep.com, or they can email info@maplesrep.com, and that goes straight to me. I'm always happy to answer questions.
And me is?
And I'm Bridget Grace Sheaf, and I'm the Director of Audience Services and Community Engagement here at Maples Rep.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Missouri. We'll see you here.
Support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives. And Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.